This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jimmy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
I lost my mind again, out where the river swelled with rain. She kindly took me in.
Greetings, everyone, fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is that time of the week, episode 4 of the P2 Podcast, launched weekly from Trinidad World Recording here in Fort Worth, Texas. I am your host, Phil Pritchett, on the show where we talk all things Phil, all things full band. With me, as always, the great man himself, the Fort Worth legend, Kurt South. How you doing over there, Kurt?
I'm great, Phil. How are you today?
Everybody doing well? You feeling good?
Yes, everyone is well. Everyone's good. I like that intro. That's the kind of respect an aging singer-songwriter deserves.
That's right. You've deserved every bit of it and more, I can tell you.
Thank you.
Well, today we're going to get into, we always do kind of a news segment at the top of the show. We're going to talk about some guys that you and I repeatedly run across online mm-hmm. who are doing things differently, in our opinion, really doing things right as far as, keeping their music to themselves, the rights and stuff like that, but, spreading it around, letting the fans be involved. Guys really who seem to be growing their career and doing it well, putting out some good music. We'll get into that. New internet marketing, cool guys, at the top of the show. In our middle segment, we always talk about what's been going on in Phil World, Trinidad World Recording, recordings of other bands. And today we're going to talk about some guys that you and I know out there in the Texas music, blah, 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 whatever that is, genre. But, some young guys who, some of whom have recorded here at the studio, and guys who've impressed us in a lot of different ways. And then finally, oh man, the vault, the P2 vault, our final segment. We'll take a close look. Some recordings you may have missed, some recordings you need to own, some recordings you own that you should not own. Maybe some perspective on an obscure record, or maybe some perspective on a record you thought you already knew everything about, that maybe you could lend a thought just like on Gringo Honeymoon or something. I know that record back and forth. What could Kurt South possibly, what new light could he shine on something like that?
There are nuggets that I have found that you have yet to see.
But a perspective, a choice offering. So we're going to get into that as well. But back to the top here. Kurt and I are always online. I read blogs. I'm always getting tipped off to, hey, check out how this guy's, giving all this, MP3s away. This guy's got a Cafe Press website, merch setup, which is kind of cool. This guy, you can text him and request, what he does on his next record. Anything like that always intrigues me. I kind of look at what he's doing and say, man, how's this working for him? One guy we've run across recently, and I know you know a lot more about him, Curtis, than I do.
Mm-hmm.
What's this guy's name?
Jonathan Colton.
Well, he came across the Bob Lefsetz letter blog that we love to read, or someone had written in about him, I think, and everything was, he had a lot of information there about like how he spread his stuff around. And bring us up to speed on this guy, South. What do you know about him?
Jonathan Colton is based out of Brooklyn, New York, and is a former computer programmer. Quit his day job, I believe, in 2005. As far as his music goes, I'm not that familiar, honestly. It's kind of folk rock for geeks, from what I gather. He's very tech-savvy, tech-oriented.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of references to RSS feeds and
There's some stuff on his Wikipedia page about him. He's kind of a geeky guy,
proudly geeky guy, but he has incorporated his tech-savvy with music. He's taken He's basically applied everything he knows about computers and the internet and all the latest technology,
and use it to promote his career.
Use that as a vehicle for his music career, which in this day and age, it's looking like he's the kind of guy you want on your side.
That's right.
I mean, he's always on the cutting edge of new innovations in the internet.
Well, he's obviously going around the country and man, really packing some rooms. Does he have a band, or is he just kind of by himself kind of guy?
He's usually just by himself. As a matter of fact, I know he's got a House of Blues show coming up in Dallas soon, and he'll be in Houston as well. But he plays big rooms.
Man, one of the great things I saw, the idea he did that originally caught my eye, and I like that he was very open about this as to how he did it on his website, was how he had it to where he could tell everybody in the audience to take out their phone and text their email address to a certain number, where he just had it all set up to go straight to his email list.
Right.
Because I know you agree, dude, the email list, while it's the most vital thing in your building your fan base, man, it is a beating to get those signatures and try to read the drunken handwriting the next day, you know, and try to put it all into your machine.
Out of the thousand signatures that you collect, you can read 80 of them.
Yeah, that's right. So
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, he in the middle of the show, he'll say, all right, everybody take out their phone. If you're not on the email list, just text your email, you know, one of the short little, like, you know, 14114 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Text me your email. That's a great idea.
It's a wonderful idea.
And, you know, all of a sudden you got 200 people just signed up on there.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one thing that he said he was doing that really caught my eye.
Yeah.
Great idea. Another guy we run across a lot, of course, is Martin Sexton, who we've I'm kind of like that with him. I don't know his music as well. You know, I know he's got this great voice, and I've seen him on YouTube and heard a lot of his stuff. But, it's interesting. I'm more intrigued with guys who what really gets me interested in someone is just, you know, where I hear about them. If it's from other people and I check out their website, and, man, it's very open. It's very interactive, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That draws me in. And I can be a fan of these guys like Colton or Sexton. People go, man, that's a great song.
Right.
And I kind of say, you know, I haven't really heard his music that much. It's almost as if the image of just what the guy represents is really what you're really about, you know.
The
does
idea
that make sense?
Of
and I'm not trying to say the music doesn't matter. I'm not saying that. But that's almost as important as the music, ultimately, is who this guy is.
Well, I just like those guys because, you know, music's all about, when it comes down to opinion, what one person likes, the other person can't stand.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it more from just a business model and how this guy presents himself to the world. That's what I dig, you know. I'm a fan of Martin Sexton's music, but what really latched me onto him was just, man, here's this guy just kind of does it himself.
Yeah.
Like Jonathan Colton, just gets up on stage with a guitar and has this great voice and holds a room under his spell, you know, a theater.
And you know, the whole, I think this all goes back to, I'm the same way with Bob Schneider. We've played some shows with Bob, and I'm always a little caught off guard. People say, man, what do you like so much about Bob? What songs do you like? Do you have his records? And I kind of shrug my shoulders and go, man, I really don't know his music that well. They're like, well, how come you're a fan of him? I go, man, I've seen his show, which is great.
Yeah.
And I know when his name comes up in a room or conversation, people go, man, that guy's really great.
Right.
And he's not making silly commercials and doing stupid songs on radio. I just know that's not what he's doing.
Yeah.
So it's his essence, man, and his image, his being, so to speak, that is really what draws you in these days. And if you're real honest with yourself, that's what drew you to Dylan and these guys.
Yeah.
Now, that's back before we were born. But the reason we loved our rock stars of the 60s and 70s, they did operate outside the system.
Right,
The labels and stuff would just bend over backwards to cater to, you know, Dylan and Elton John and Neil Young. These guys, they were difficult to deal with. You know, they wouldn't turn in the record on time. The label would be wringing their hands. Those guys held all the cards, and we loved them because they followed their muse, they stuck to their guns, and they stayed out of the system.
Yeah.
That was really what the appeal of rock and roll was, and I think that has been so lost with the American Idol, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You know, the homogenization, blah, blah, of music. But so the guys like Sexton or Colton or Bob who give their stuff away, you know, you shoot them a text and they text you back. We the fans, and you and I, of course, are big music fans as well as the guys who make it. But that really is the appeal. When you really get down to the essence of what following a band or an act's about, that's it.
Well, the nuts and bolts, I think what you're saying is, in the modern day and age, you have these guys who they're not part of the music industry. They themselves are their own little industry, and it's completely driven by the fans.
That's right.
And, you know, you and I say this a lot. You know, you and I aren't in the music business. You're in the Phil Pritchett business. I'm in the Kurt South business.
No doubt about
and
it.
And our reasons are myriad for feeling that way.
Right.
And one of the main ones for me is the music industry, as it stands now, is who wants to be a part of a sinking ship? And also, one of the reasons you and I took on a career in music is there's a certain amount of freedom involved and a certain amount of independence that comes with that. You know, if I want to have somebody staring over my shoulder telling me how to dress, what to do, then I'll just go work in a cubicle somewhere.
But isn't that why we love the rock stars of old? They did it their way.
No question.
They listened to themselves. They listened to they were true to themselves. We wanted to be in their club, you know, and that's, you know, even just watching Martin Sexton, that great video on YouTube where he walked through his house that you told me about, you know, and he's just walking through, hey, here's our den. Yeah, man, I wrote a couple great songs in here. Keller Williams slept up here in this room and all this other fun stuff. Man, it made me a fan watching it. And someone says, what's your favorite Martin Sexton album? I'd be sheepish to say, well, I really don't have one. But as far as me knowing who he is and what he's about, I'm going to go out and tell people, hey man, y'all check this guy out. He's the real thing. And who knows? I'll listen to his music as well. And you hate to say, well, man, the music's good. It's kind of an afterthought. That's not true. But there's a lot of good music out there. There's not a lot of good artists out there. A good, kind of rock star type guys out there. We all got software that can make our music sound good, that can
can make a record.
Yeah,
anyone.
You really can.
Anyone.
I mean, to an extent. Now, you know, it can be crappy, but, you know, these guys wouldn't even be in the conversation if they weren't turning people on with their music. So I take that for granted. I'm sure the guy's great. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I think it all comes back full circle. I think what we're saying is they wind up just being musicians. And
that's the main thing that matters.
And they're just musicians. Real musicians who want to connect with the audience that supports them. And man, all the big record labels and the radio promoters and the all that other crap that exists out there that gives us headaches, it's an afterthought to them.
Yeah,
they look at the music industry and go, hey, good luck, man.
I'm going to offend a lot of our listeners with my, I've always been I've always kind of had a smoldering hatred for Coldplay. But I think that's the other end of the spectrum.
Sure,
and they might be, and they are nice guys in a fine band, okay. But their whole thing is not near as appealing to me as someone who's going to spend some time listening to music or going to a show. I'm kind of like, man, these guys got signed. They played the game. The guy married Gwyneth Paltrow or whatever the hell he did.
Mm-hmm.
And you listen to his music, and it's like it's just kind of like Radiohead without the artistry. You two without the balls, you know. It's just like, if that's what you're into, go for it.
We just lost 28 listeners.
Well, maybe so. We just lost some subscribers there. Sorry, that's the way I see it. I heard a great story about the Grammys. You see the Grammys a while back? I watched a little bit of it.
I don't watch that crap.
Well, you know, it's a train wreck kind of deal. But Radiohead, I love Radiohead. They were on the Grammys. Oh, which really put a sour spot in my stomach.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a cool artistic little, you know, they were nominated. The Ticket broadcast, the Ticket, that's 1310, the Ticket here in Dallas, told a story about that night. There's been kind of a firestorm a little bit. And I don't know if it was kind of played up a little bit, but Miley Cyrus, you know, the Hannah Montana, she was at the Grammys. Mm-hmm. And she was texting all her friends. This came out, you know, a few days later, that, hey, oh my God, I'm going to get to meet Radiohead, my favorite band. I mean, just the most real artistic rock act at the Grammys. I mean, come on, you just got McCartney and Kanye running around, or Coldplay just, you know, jostling to get in pictures. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Radiohead, they said they weren't around backstage. No one knew what they were doing. So finally, Miley just is all excited. She sends her people out to get the Radiohead and just, hey man, guess what? Radiohead, Miley Cyrus wants to meet you guys. And they said that Radiohead guys just kind of looked blankly and said, who? And they're like, you know, Hannah Montana, she's a big fan. She was coming to take some pictures, and they just look over at her and get at the people, and they go, yeah, we really don't do that. And they just left. And dude, they said she was so crushed by this and went online and kind of, you know, sent some real nasty texts to her friends. Like, can you believe those guys? I just loved hearing that, man. They're just not glad handlers, man. You know, they're probably beaten down by even having to go to the Grammys at all, you know? And hey, this teeny bopper wants to meet you, and they're just like, man, we're out of here.
So what?
Adios.
So what?
I loved it.
By the way, this is probably a story for another time, but I spent an afternoon with the drummer from Coldplay. I need to tell that story one podcast.
Boy.
Since they keep coming up.
Do I have to be here for it?
Yes.
I heard it was a good story. I remember you saying something about
it. It's a great story.
Yeah, where was that?
Woody's. Woody's Tavern, Fort Worth, Texas. Drummer from Coldplay.
Wow.
And Kurt South. He bought me pizza.
Is that right?
Yeah.
A story for another time.
Story for another time.
Coming up in our next segment, we're doing a little talk about Jonathan Colton. Check him out. I think it's jonathancolton.com. Joko to his fans.
Joko, yeah.
Then we got Martin Sexton, of course, from, where does he live, Boston?
Yeah, he lives outside of Boston.
I saw a real cool kid at our camp. We spend, my wife and I work, of course, in Colorado in the summers. This kind of hip, quiet kid had a Martin Sexton shirt on. And that's a really, because I'd always heard his name. I kind of go, hey, man, what's up with the Martin Sexton? He goes, oh, man, he's great. And I've been interested, yeah. Really interested ever since.
Yeah.
Cool. Martin, Colton, keep it up, man. We're all paying attention. Don't do the duet with Kanye or go to the Grammys or you know, show up in an episode of Grey's Anatomy. For crying out loud, don't do it, or we'll all move on to the next guy. Coming up on our next segment, we're going to talk about what's new in Phil World, shows and stuff like that. Specifically, some records I've had that I've been fortunate enough to produce. Some by our friends, one of them, Mike Mathis. Great
Mike Mathis.
Great Mike Mathis. We're going to talk a little about his recording, and some local guys here we think are doing it right as well, so stick around.
And when the snow came down, it was cold, I was lost from everything. She took my hand and said, follow the weeks, they will always lead to spring. And though I'll always lose my way, stuck in some frozen winter day, her light will get us all to May, and we're whole again.
From Trinidad World Recording, Kurt South is here. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we have some talk here about what's been going on in the studio. Man, you know, I've been fortunate to make a lot of records for some bands. Mostly people starting out, guys. A lot of bands have, you know, opened a lot of shows for us in various parts of the country. And then they'll say, well, we're trying to make this record. We don't have a lot of money. We're trying to do it right and all this. And I've invited some of them to, you know, feel free to come to Fort Worth, as all of you are too, listening out there, bands. We do it all the time from hobby band. I've done a band of friends of mine, some of whom were doctors, you know, just doing some beer songs. They've come in and recorded. It's all music after all. It's supposed to be fun. And but some guys have been in here who have, I think, been impressive. We're going to take a look at a friend of ours who was in here recording, Mr. Mike Mathis. His band, he didn't call it Mike Mathis and the Righteous Few, which is a name I loved. But I noticed he didn't use that on his record, did he?
No, he didn't. Mike Mathis. Just Mike Mathis.
Mike Mathis, yeah. Drive Them Nails.
Well, ever since I met you, I can't stand to be alone. I'm gonna take you out to that wood pile, gonna build us up a home. I'll drive them nails, baby. Keep on driving till I'm through. It may not look that good, but I'll do it all for you. Now we're gonna have a family, baby's coming soon. And if we keep this up, we'll have to add another room. I'll drive them nails, baby.
You can count on me. I drive them nails pretty, mama. Just you wait and see. Well, now the bills are piling high and it's about to hit the fan. But it's hard to make a living when you're working with your hands. So I drive them nails, baby, till my arm is tired and sore. I drive them nails pretty, mama, till they just can't go no more.
To Texas A&M. He's just a, hey, man, what's going on? I think he's going to law school.
Yeah,
Smart guy.
Yeah, he was in the 94th percentile on his LSATs. He's a brilliant dude.
Mike Mathis. So he rolled in here. As we've expressed on the show a lot, there's a lot of ground rules here at Trinidad. Maybe more need to be written. Where I'm very sheepish about guys bringing in, oh, my buddy's a drummer, man, you know. He's great. He's got this awesome kit, you know, and the guy rolls in with some punk ass, just beat up out of the van.
Double kick pedal.
Double kick pedal. And the heads are gone. They're out of tune. I was like, oh my gosh. And man, when you start there, you've really got trouble. And I've made mistakes in the past. Some of the early projects I did, I didn't want to hurt the guy's feelings. Wasn't he was a bad drummer, maybe, or. Oh,
he wasn't that good.
Well, but you know, you start with the rough drum sounds, man. You got nothing from that.
No.
Mathis, I was lucky, and he came to me and was interested. He said, "Man, come watch my band." So I went to the Aardvark. I think I invited you along that night. Mm-hmm. Couldn't make it. And the Righteous Few is up there, and he had his drummer and bass player and him, 3-piece band, and the drummer was pretty busy, but a good player.
Like Robbie's good, yeah. He's a
Robbie
good player.
Robbie Hamilton, good player. And so he brought in his own kit, you know, and he had kind of the tight snare and the small toms, which I'm not a big fan of generally, but he could play and he knew the songs, and I was like, man, it'll work out. And his bass player.
Andrew is his name.
Andrew, yes. Good player
and a good
singer.
Yes, and he's a good songwriter. He does his own solo.
Yeah, he
thing
wrote that
too.
Song "Smoke and Mirrors,"
that's
which
right.
is on the album, which is a really good song. And Mike's got this cool, laid back country voice. We'll play a little bit here at the end of the segment for you to check out. I think that is important, man. That if you do come to record a record, I mean, it sounds so stupid to say you got to have good songs and be able to sing, but Mike really could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not exceptional. I mean, he wouldn't call himself some sort of a opera singer or some sort of a Stevie Ray Vaughan type guitar player. But he at least had his songs ready to go.
He can play Mike Mathis music better than anybody.
He can.
That's
yes.
the key.
That is the key. And if you have a band, or if you think you have a band, man, you've got to be rehearsed or it's going to be a real battle. If you come in here and say, man, my drummer's kind of new, or man, he's never recorded before, or he hasn't heard any of the songs, that's time to really take a step back and say, man, are we ready to even try to come in here and do something?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to beat Phil down mercilessly if that happens.
those are the sessions where I walk in and I find you curled up under the desk just on your 12th cup of coffee.
Well, it's a tough deal. I'm always in the position of, and I say this on the show all the time, it's music's supposed to be fun. It's not worth really making someone feel bad or really hurting someone's feelings. You know, hey, man, you suck. You can't play on your own album. I always never try to do that. After all, they're coming up with the money and they're making the effort to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say to any of you out there who's saying, man, maybe we go record at Phil's. Man, we'd love to have you. And you don't have to have it all figured out. But, man, take into account who you've got with you and how well y'all know your songs together. And that is, Mike was probably the best example I've had in the last year of a guy who, you know, he had played, they played some gigs together, and what a difference that made. And when they came in, they just blew through those songs. You know, I went back and put an organ on it and a tambourine and did some harmony vocals, Mike and I did, and some leads, and man, it was done. And when you do it like that, it really works. You don't spend a lot of money on it, and there's a, you always talk about the importance of kind of writing, recording, and getting it out there. If the quicker you can increase that velocity, so to speak, I think the better it is for your career in the long run.
There's a neon light that's burning bright, but it barely cuts the haze. And there's a jukebox and a bartender that have both seen better days. And there's a tap that pours salvation out and some friends to cheer me up. And a little bag tucked in my coat in case that ain't enough. But it's all just smoke and mirrors, just a trick in our own minds. When we raise our glasses up and give a toast to these good times, it's all just smoke and mirrors, little lies we tell ourselves. 'Cause truth be told, if times were good, we'd all be somewhere else.
You know, a guy like Mike is just, he's been playing most of his life. He grew up around music, and it's really second nature to him. And when he came in here to do his record, he already knew what it was going to sound like in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
Even though he was new to the music, to the business end of things, he already kind of knew his strengths and weaknesses, knew that he had a band who knew the songs. They could come in here and play them. And, you know, it is what it is, and it is really, really good stuff.
And, man, he knew what it sounds like. There's a lot to be said for that.
Sure.
That's a funny statement. When he sang and listened back, he just shrugged and said, that sounds like us. Because they had played gigs and they had rehearsed.
Yeah.
It's very difficult when some guy comes in here who's never recorded, and, you know, I put a band together for him, and we play, and you play it back to them for the first time. You know, you're thinking, man, this is the first time maybe they've even heard this song come back at them.
Mm-hmm.
This song not coming out of their mouth, and they're in their bathroom or wherever they're kind of doing a demo. And it can be a bit, there can be a sense of shock value. It's kind of like, you know, people hear their voice back, they're always real shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And that is difficult. So, you know, I would recommend, you know, doing some demos in your house, some little four tracks, you know, just get you a little digital recorder for a couple $100. Do some guitar demos, arrange your songs, you know, get to where you can drive around in the car and get used to the way you sound. And then you're able to really go out and record and work on other stuff.
Yeah.
But it is really hard. And I've run into this in some situations where I've done a big mix and we've had, you know, Stu and Blue and the backing band, and the person just sits there and says, man, I can't believe that's how my voice sounds. And you're just like, dude, what? You know, and there you are. What do you do from there?
Yeah. Well, and you have to, we talked about this in an earlier podcast. You have a lot of it depends on your expectations and what your goal is for the final result.
Right.
And if you're wanting to come in here and make a Martina McBride sounding album, probably came to the wrong
place.
Probably
need to go somewhere else.
I mean, right. If you want to come in and do what Mathis did or what I do when I come in here,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll bring the band in here and we'll have a song done in a couple hours.
Right.
From front to back. Because we've been doing it long enough to know that, man, I sound like this, good or bad.
That's right.
This is the way we are. And this is how we play. And this is it. You know, this is what we're going to present to the world. And Mike did such a good job of that. And that album just gets better every time I listen to it. And
it really is great. He just had great songs. And the production came out really good on it. It was just, we really caught something on that. So check it out. It's on iTunes. It's Mike Mathis, Drive Them Nails. Mike's got that drawl of a voice. And, man, it is just, I can't remember how many are on there, 12 songs maybe.
Yeah.
Really good stuff,
front to back,
man. If you want to hear some great new music and, you know, hear what we do here at Trinidad World Recording when everything really kind of lines up and works, check out Mike Mathis, Drive Them Nails. We'll play a little bit of Mathis right here on our way out. On our next segment, we're going into the vault, the P2 vault. What did we decide we're going to talk about?
In the P2 vault?
Yes. At the end of the... In our last final segment, what are we going to do?
I thought we were going to delve into some obscure obscure music by people that everybody knows.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We're going to dig into some obscure music by some artists you've probably heard of, but maybe some gems you might have listened.
Yeah.
Might have missed.
We're going to go digging in the dirt is what we're going
to
do.
Digging in the dirt. You think you know this artist? Well, really take a close listen to the following. That's coming up in the P2 Vault next. Check out Mike Mathis right here. We'll be right back. Pritchett here, along with my good friend and fellow singer-songwriter, Kurt South.
Hello, everyone.
Man, we're talking here in the vault today. Oh, digging through the vinyl records over here on the wall here at Trinidad World Recording. I picked up a cheap record rack, a large, heavy plywood display from the old Connoisseur's record store that I used to go buy vinyl in Arlington. Out of business, though, and but I'm got a rack off of them. Got my stuff over there. Well, we're going to look at some great Texas artists. Some you may know, some you may not as well, but have made some great recordings. Number one we're going to look at here is the one and only, right, record?
The one
and only record. A legend among songwriters everywhere. I mean, when I lived in Nashville, the great Rivers Rutherford, mm-hmm. who's written countless top 10, you know, number one hit songs, who I got to hang around with a lot when I lived in Nashville. Great songwriter. When he spoke of this guy, he started shaking. And that, of course, is Mr. Willis Allen Ramsey.
Nowhere I've been running from my pain, running from the things I used to be.
We've seen him show up on you know, Step Inside This House, the great compilation where he did several songs from guys he admired. I got to meet Willis Allen Ramsey in San Antonio one night. We were playing a place called Niles Wine Bar, kind of an upscale wine bar kind of thing in San Antonio. We played it a few times and went down there to play. And they said, man, you're playing tonight, Phil. Don't worry. We had another act show up who thought he was playing, but it's the wrong night. No worries. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was setting up my gear, and the guy in the corner, there, that was that guy over there. And, man, it's Willis Allen Ramsey, just with gray hair and his guitar. He's just kind of at the table. And I was like, what? And, of course, I kind of knew some of the story, some of the legend. He made this one record, 1971 or so. Gosh, you know, J.J. Cale, Leon Russell played on it. Jim Keltner. I mean, it's just a who's who of just, you know, badass dudes from the early 70s. Recorded in all different kinds of studios all over the country. Man, The Ballad of Spider John, Muskrat Candlelight, which has appeared on numerous recordings by other artists. Muskrat
many,
Love.
Many.
Muskrat Candlelight, doing the town in, doing it right.
The great Northeast Texas women.
Northeast Texas women, just an anthem. Angel Eyes, Watermelon Man, Satin Sheets, probably my favorite on the album. Great song. So Willis Allen Ramsey, man, I got to meet him, and I was just getting ready to move to Nashville. This was like maybe 1999. Introduced myself to him, and really super nice guy. I guess he lives in Wimberley now, near mm-hmm. Austin. So we talked a lot about music. He's like, man, I'm just banging around, doing stuff, real nice, soft-spoken. I said, man, I'm getting ready to move to Nashville. You know, it's a pretty neat town, and we're excited about it. And he kind of looked at me, and he said, man, Nashville is great, he said, but it is not Texas. And he was right. I think I know just what he means these days. Willis Allen Ramsey, just a legendary album here, front to back. If you can find a copy of it, I've got an old vinyl.
Is it on iTunes? That's a question.
I don't know. Willis Allen Ramsey, I have to look
surely
that up.
Someone has reissued it.
Yeah.
Put it on iTunes.
But he is a guy, he is just a patron saint of kind of the unsung great singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Gosh, not that he's unsung or he's seen his best days, but you know, you think of someone like Adam Carroll today or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a guy who, man, you go to some bar and maybe the crowd's real small and he maybe has an off night of sorts. So people say, man, it was too noisy in there. He gets distracted or something. But when you just sit there and listen to like some of those Adam Carroll albums, and I've gotten to play with Adam a few times, and man, you know, you really see that the guy's a really good songwriter. And it's tough out there, though, for guys like that who are so true to their writing and their word craft and their songs that and they get snowed under by the festivals and the need to have an in-ear monitor rig and a light guy. You know, it's
it's 37 years later. We're still talking about it, though.
We're still talking about
one album. Maybe Willis Allen Ramsey had the right business model. Put out one record
and let it sell for the next 40 years.
And screw the rest.
See, if he'd have put out, if he'd have gone through the disco era or something, just Willis Allen Ramsey with some, you know, star-shaped sunglasses and he teams up with
shoes.
He teamed up with Barry Gibb, produced some of his stuff in the late 70s. Would we still look back on this record with the reverence?
No.
Probably not. Wouldn't you think?
Not at all.
That's probably not. And it's good that he didn't die. See, a lot of guys make the one record and die in a plane crash or the overdose.
Yeah.
Didn't do that either. Maybe it is the best of both worlds. The one great record, live in Wimberley in a beautiful setting the rest of your life mm-hmm. as just a legend amongst people who should know.
Well, and maybe he took what we've been talking about of, man, you know, I don't have just 15 albums with 10 great songs on them. He just said, man,
I've got
10 great songs in me. I'm going to put them on one album, and I'm not going to beat you down with my B-sides ever again.
That's right. Yeah.
And maybe he was right, because all these years later, we're still talking about it.
Willis Allen Ramsey, look it up. See if he's on iTunes. If not, you know, find that CD. It's just a green record with his picture on it. I think it's just self-titled. Shelter Records, 1971. Just legendary. Talk to a songwriter from here to Australia. Anybody who's in country music and knows something about, you know, Guy Clark and Lyle Lovett, if you mention Willis Allen Ramsey, their eyes will light up, I promise.
You'll come over soon as you see me boogie woogie across the silver screen. You can hang them high or hang them low. I put them in the ceilings wherever I go. And they'd swing all night in the rafter lights. There, do, 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 do. Hallelujah, what's it to you? God, you called for me, I got my Spanish taste.
Well, another guy who would definitely speak glowingly about Willis Allen Ramsey, of course, is our friend Robert Earl Keane. Talk about a legend in his own time these days.
Yeah.
It goes without saying that we all love Keane. On the surface, talking about Robert Earl Keane is kind of like talking like about Tom Petty, like in the other episode. Not
Big
shedding
shot.
A whole lot of light by saying, man, he's really great. But you had an interesting insight, though, Kurt, about Keane. Because he has, as you know, as he continues to put out a lot of records, there is some interesting perspectives on the kind of work he's done. And he has grown a lot with his songwriting and his records and his art, especially maybe in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on some of his more maybe obscure stuff?
Well, first of all, I hear a lot of sentiment about people, his new stuff. Not that, man, his new stuff. That guy, at age however old he is.
Still doing great stuff.
Just doing amazing stuff.
You know, it's funny, our drummer, the great Stu Wiley with the beard, Kurt's former drummer who I stole, you know, a younger guy. Mm-hmm. How old is Stu, 26?
26, 27.
You know, he kind of, you know, I was talking about
his beard's 33.
His beard is 33, as old as he is. You know, we were talking about Keen, and of course, Stu's a big Keen fan. But that was interesting that his point of reference was really the new records. You know, I was talking about, you know, West Textures and Bigger Piece of Sky and stuff. You know, stuff I was listening to, like when I was in high school, college, mm-hmm. and out of college. And Stu was kind of like, oh, I really don't know that. I kind of picked up with him at number
gravitational
two.
Forces.
Yeah, gravitational forces and, you know, walking distance, stuff like that. That was kind of more in his wheelhouse.
Farm Fresh Onions.
Pretty interesting that those were his, he goes, man, those are the greatest records he's ever made, and that's why I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. Very interesting that, you know, he really doesn't, yeah. He doesn't own, you know, West Textures and, you know, the first live album.
No Kind of Dancer.
Sons of Herman Hall. Stuff.
Yeah.
Very cool. But, man, I love that song, Going Nowhere Blues, man. Which one's that on?
Going Nowhere Blues is on Gravitational Forces.
See, I've been remiss in keeping up with Keen. I'm the opposite of Stu. You know, after Number Two Live Dinner came out, I started.
You moved on.
Well, I was doing my own thing, and I'd kind of lost track of him. I quit buying his stuff. I'd hear him play it though. We played a lot of shows with Robert Earl over the years, and you know, he'd play something like, "Man, that new song," you know, and I'd always be impressed by it, but. Yeah, man, that Going Nowhere Blues is great.
Awesome
and,
song.
Of course, awesome Feeling song. Good Again, maybe, I mean, in the top five Robert Earl Keen songs ever. And that's a, you know, a relatively new one.
Frequent appearance in the Kurt South live set, Feeling Good Again.
That's right.
Always. Doesn't matter what part of the country I'm in. You start playing that song, people start clapping. They just know it.
So what's your favorite, most obscure Keen song?
Man, one of the albums that really cemented Keen as just being a hero of mine is one that critics and other fans, and even Robert Earl Keen himself, has panned.
Yes. Probably his debut on Arista Records, where he did do
Arista
Austin, which was a division of Arista Records that, you know, was going to focus more on the Americana AAA mm-hmm. type of deal. That record, of course.
Picnic.
Flatter than a tabletop. Makes you wonder why they stopped him. Wagon must have lost a wheel, or they lacked ambition one. On the great migration west, separated from the rest, though they might have tried their best, they never caught the sun. So they sunk some roots down in the dirt to keep from blowing off the earth. Built a town around here, and when the dust had all but cleared, they called it Neverland.
With the legendary photo of the car burning.
Absolutely.
Now, was that the real photo?
That was the real photo.
Who had that?
Some random guy years later.
Had a
picture. Of course, the story of Robert Earl Keen being at Willie Nelson's picnic.
His car catching on fire.
Car blows up in the parking lot. Some guy just came up with this picture years later. And,
wow.
And he wound up using it as the album cover. And it's a great picture. It's just like a 72 Pontiac. Just
ablaze.
Just blowing up. Not just on fire. Blowing the hell up.
Dude, that is
such a great story. And thankfully that drunken gentleman captured it in time and was Robert Earl was able to use it later for the album cover. But man, that record came out, I want to say, 97.
Well, we played a thing at University of Texas, like a parents' weekend thing, where we opened for Keen, and that record had just come out, and that was the first album where I kind of realized, man, I kind of had my own thing going, and I kind of lost track of kind of his new stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he was playing, you know, Over the Waterfall and stuff like that,
yeah.
Picnic, and but you know, he was real nice to us backstage and everything.
Well, Robert Earl made that album in the late 90s in an attempt to make a straightforward rock and roll album. He was you know, consciously trying to make a slight departure from what he'd done before.
What were some of the other songs on there?
Undone, Over the Waterfall.
Then Came Lo
Maine. I Wonder Where My Baby Is Tonight.
Right.
Coming Home with the Son and the Brother. I did the great, great version of James McMurtry's Level End.
Yeah, okay. That
it's was just, oh, it's badass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He also did a great Dave Alvin cover, Dave Alvin and the Blasters. They've been a legendary Americana band.
What was
band
the one with
California.
Margo Timmons from the
That
Cowboy
was Then
Junkies.
Came Lemaine.
Oh, that's right.
Well, she sang
that
on
the one
she sang on? No, she said, well, I know she sang
Margo
on
Margo Timmons, of course, from Cowboy Junkies. I know she sang on a lot of the tracks on that album.
But, man, he did the Dave Alvin song he did was called Fourth of July. It's just an incredible song.
Yeah.
But I read some really mixed reviews on that album when it came out. And I remember I was living in Dallas when it came out, and I went to the Blockbuster Music, back when Blockbuster was selling CDs on Greenville Avenue. And Robert Earl was going to do an in-store, and we walked in at the same time. Keen and I were walking at the same time.
Yeah.
Just walks up. I actually opened the door for him. And I got the record and went home and listened to it. I was just floored. Because I've always been a big rock and roll guy, as well as country. And it was produced by the legendary John Keane, who is based out of Athens, Georgia.
Right, right.
Worked with REM and numerous other rock and roll luminaries. He left Brian Duckworth, his longtime fiddle player and mandolin player, mm-hmm. back in Texas when he did this album.
Yeah.
He told Duckworth, hey, we're not doing the Texas thing.
Swing country deal. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, he and Duckworth grew up together.
I didn't realize that was kind of a conscious effort, you know.
Yeah, they've been best friends all their life. Of course, Duckworth is retired from the road now. But it was a big point of contention with he and Duckworth. Hey, you're not going to be on this record.
Huh? Yeah.
And I read an interview where Keane got real in-depth to how that kind of strained the relationship a little bit. But he was going to go make a rock album. And later, Robert Earl kind of said, man, that album was a little unfocused, a little all over the road. But, man, I think that's why I liked it.
Yeah,
those songs are... It's definitely Robert Earl Keane. The songwriting is still great. But, man, you know, some of the lyrics are... they're not. It's not a storyteller album necessarily.
Right. It's a little more abstract. A little more.
You know, he's
open ended. It's not as vivid and you know.
Yeah.
5 pound bass and there's no novelty tracks on that.
No,
on
not
that
at all. Except you don't listen to it and go, man, I know exactly what he's talking about. You listen to it and you go, man, that's just a good rock and roll song.
Yeah.
It's the instrumentation's different. Rich Brotherton's really prominent with his guitar playing on the album. Mm-hmm. But man, I thought that record was number one. It's ballsy for a guy like Keane to just say, hey man, I'm gonna leave what's worked for me behind for a while
and
try this. I admire anybody who's willing to do that. And I think a lot of Robert Earl Keane fans maybe just kind of scratched their head at first when they heard it, and were just like, hey man, give us Road Goes On Forever again.
That's right.
Robert Earl said, hey, I already gave you that in spades.
You've got
plenty of that. I'm going to give you some of this. And I revisited that album recently. It had been a long time since I just sat down and listened to it.
Picnic. Robert Earl Keane. Perhaps he passed it over.
Maybe the best track on the album, Running with the Night.
But you know that it's all right. I'm there to dance and
Running with the Night, that is a great song.
Running with the Night, just great song. The album just sounds awesome, and a lot of Keane fans just don't ever mention it when it comes up. And if I were introducing a new person to Robert Earl Keane, three or four of those tracks on that album would be ones that I would say, hey, you got to listen to these to know what the guy's about.
That's right. Well, send us any thoughts you have about Keane or Willis Allen Ramsey. Or perhaps maybe some other artist or album maybe you'd like to hear us kind of discuss and delve into a little bit in the P2 Vault. Send all your questions, requests. We'll address them on the air. It's phil@philpritchett.com, and we will address your concerns here on the air, and we will put it into the podcast. Well, for Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast from Trinidad World Recording, and for my good friend, Kurt South, thanks for being here today, Kurt.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
We're going to be signing off here on episode 4 of the P2 Podcast. We hope to see you all out there on the road. Go to philpritchett.com or p2tunes.com to download music for $4 a record on p2tunes.com Or you can get all of our stuff, as well as Kurt South stuff, as well as the Mike Mathis stuff. Maybe even Willis Allen Ramsey. We don't know.
Maybe. I hope.
We hope so. iTunes, man. Check it out. Download away. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time here on the podcast. Everybody take care.
I was born in the wintertime underneath the purple sky. Packed my things at 17 and I kissed my folks goodbye.